from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
That's right. This is the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show with myself, Alon.
And myself, Aura.
And myself, Rich.
Rich the D-Bag Crawford!
Oh, is that what
wow.
I'm being called now?
Now, normally I would just chuckle, but I'm feeling a little empathetic tonight. So would you call him a D-Bag?
Why would I say something like that about my dear, dear friend Rich? Rich, can you guess why I would say something like that?
I think it would probably have something to do with the podcast we put up on the Googletron website.
Do you think so? Do you think maybe because you heard me playing it before the show?
And you mentioned it earlier this week.
When we were recording GolgoCast 1, which was really second podcast. So, Aura.
Okay, so you said we. So you are also now making another podcast?
Yeah, well, you know, I sat with them and did it. I might do it again. Feel free to join in.
It's not that I felt left out. It's just kind of weird.
Let me tell you, listen to the show. Already too many cooks in that kitchen.
We got this show right here. It's pretty
well,
good.
I don't have to do any work for that one. That's the beauty. This one, I feel like I have all sorts of responsibilities. Those responsibilities, of course, coming with content to discuss, preparing the show afterwards, handling the website, the feed, and all that stuff, which I'm not complaining about. That's my job. That's cool. Now, Aura, when did you get here today to the station?
Totally got here at the 45.
Now, today is a bit of an outlier. Usually, when do you get here?
Usually, I get here at like 8:30.
Yeah, and usually you come with all sorts of stuff prepared, right?
Usually, I have so many things to talk about that it's like I'm Rush Limbaugh.
Because, man, you have spent a lot of time preparing for the show.
I usually dropped
my phone.
Norm, you're back there. Do you remember when I got here today?
Yeah.
Yeah, about what time?
You got here like about quarter to eight.
That's exactly correct. Now, right now, it's just after 9. The show airs a bit after 9, so let's do the math on that. I was here more than an hour in advance.
You got here really early.
That's very diligent of
Norm,
you, my friend.
Is that about the normal time I've been getting here for, say, the last 2 months?
Yes.
Ah, there we go.
So, I'm going to say no. I'm going to call shenanigans on that.
That's the normal time. You think I prepped Norm for this?
I'm just saying. I've been here at 8:15 before, and you were not here within the last couple of months.
All right. So let's listen to what Rich had to say on Golgatron podcast number 0. I haven't rigged this up to the system or anything. We're just going off the speakers of my computer.
This is
going to
be high quality.
Here we go.
I think what it is we come in Tuesday, and we're like, okay, so what are we talking about this week? Like, what happened? And we just start, like, making stuff up. Like, I think if we actually spent a half an hour before the show of this is what we're going to talk about this week and whatnot, like, it would be a lot better.
So Rich thought maybe if we got here a half an hour before the show, we could talk about stuff, we could come up with something. Now, Rich, when did you get here today?
About 20 minutes before the show.
And what did you bring to help you research things that you might talk about?
I got nothing. I have a phone.
You've got a phone.
I'm playing around with my phone.
Now, what do you do during the week? Do you have a job?
No.
No. Do you go to school?
No.
No. So you have approximately 24 hours times 7 days a week, minus the 1 hour of this show. So 24 times 6 plus 23, that's what, 120, 160, 167 hours a week when you could be researching things to talk about on the show. And you go on another show. And you talk about how we don't do a good enough job preparing for this show, yourself included, because you'd like to get here maybe half an hour in advance and research. But you don't bring the tools or come in half an hour. I come in here an hour and a half early. Aura spends God knows how much time at home and work
prepping
for the show.
Normally I spend about an hour or so.
More than anybody else, I think.
Stuff, really. Yeah. Before the show.
Maybe he's not due the D-bag moniker. Maybe I should just lay off. I don't know.
Well, I think that, I mean, normally, you know, what do you, before you played that clip, actually, I was thinking, you know, maybe Elon's just being an a-hole. But then, you played the clip, and then, well, he was being an a-hole, but his a-holeness is quite justified. And so, yeah.
All right.
Dude, come on. We pull our weight, but I also like this. I like this how we're getting into a very meta discussion here, and so this is very wiretappy.
I had to jump in there. We don't have to take that much time on the show. I just had to make sure that our listeners, who may not be Golgatron listeners yet, or Golgocast listeners, or Golgatron readers, whatever we want to call them, part of the Golgatron Empire. Maybe they're not there yet.
No, this is great because it's like our radio show is breaking the fourth wall. It's like it used to be a nice little like friendly self-contained thing. And then now the radio show realizes that all this other stuff's happening, and
maybe it's like there's a civil war.
Yeah.
And Rich is caught in between.
Sort of a civil war. So that was actually pretty funny. But there's actually something video game related, although sort of, that I wanted to relate to you guys and everyone else out there.
All right.
And that's so I started teaching this week, and this is kind of like a yearly thing I do.
You did this last year, right?
I did it last year, I'm doing it again this year. And so, you know, as I fancy myself a scientist of sorts, and so I like to do various kinds of experiments, and especially when I have about 20-odd high school students at my disposal, this makes me very happy because I can do experiments on them.
That's a good reason to go into teaching.
And I can't do all the experiments I want to do on them, but some of the ones that I can do without getting in trouble are, for example, I like to try and see if I can get them to think critically about video games.
High schoolers.
Yes.
Can you get them to think critically about anything?
Well, see, this is what I'm trying to get at. Is I was actually very surprised, and I don't really know why I should have been. Maybe I should have just really known this all along. But pretty much it was very difficult to get them to admit that really anything was wrong or could be improved about the games they played. And so
any games they've played in light, not games that you made or they made. Just
well, you know, particularly, you know, I may have biased the experiment by asking them to, you know, talk and bring in games that, you know, they actually like. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they're just reticent to criticize, right, things that they like. Although, you know, I mean, once, you know, for most mature adults, right, I mean, it's almost like the opposite is true. They even have more criticisms in more specific and varying ways for things that they're, you know, the biggest fans of.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Usually we have a hard time finding the good in things.
Right. Well, that's another interesting angle to me, because it's like I always look at it from the side of, well, there's lots of good things, but it's boring to talk about things that are good because all you can do is just say that it's good and find other words that are adjectives for good.
Amazing.
Right.
That's why I have such a close relationship with my father, I think.
And so that starts getting boring, right? So to me, I find a lot more interest in criticizing things, not because I can find different words in the dictionary to say how bad something is, but because we can kind of, you know, explain why something is wrong, why it doesn't work, and kind of explore things, alternatives that, you know, could possibly, you know, remedy what those things are that are wrong. So that's interesting. So I'm saying, okay, how can I get these high schoolers to think in this way, right? And so
by in this way, you mean to actually to look critically at the things they like and find the pieces that perhaps could have been improved, even though they already like it.
That's right.
Okay.
And so, you know, I've only been doing this for a couple days this year, so we just started, but I was actually, it was surprising because every time I kind of prod them, right, by asking them questions about, you know, what they like and don't like and so on. So for a while, all their answers were, okay, more of this or less of that, right? So
can you give me one example so I better
understand
that?
So sure, like in BioShock, right? So, you know, I'm trying to get them to admit if anything's possibly wrong with BioShock. And so for,
like, take out the boredom, put in the fun.
For a while, I mean essentially, yeah. So for a while they couldn't even possibly think of anything that could be wrong with that game.
Because the game's perfect.
Well, okay, so with my relentless prodding, you know, and with my you know, I basically asserted at the end, okay, so the game's perfect, right? And then so that got them thinking a little bit, you know, because then they started thinking, well, maybe it's not perfect. So somebody then, you know, threw out for a discussion, well, when you're hacking the machines, it's a little, you know, it just kind of gets long in the tooth. I mean, they didn't use that analogy, obviously, but it gets kind of boring after a while, hacking the machines, doing the same thing over and over, right? And so I was like, okay, well, what do you think we could do to make that better?
Should we have Rich describe what hacking the machines actually involves?
I'm not going to describe it.
It's basically...
It's like a mini game of electricity. I don't know. I'm
okay, it's basically like Pipe Dream, yeah. That game, but in Bioshock, more or less. I mean, it's slightly different, but basically, I mean, it's just rearranging shapes. Anyway, so this is funny, right? So after I prod them about that, right, they're like, well, what can we do to make it better? Less hacking sequences.
Okay.
And so I still have a lot of work to do, apparently, because really the things they liked, they just wanted more of this, and the things they didn't like, they just – the only really remedy they could possibly think of is less of this, right? And, you know, this is not – I'm not saying this to disparage teenagers in general or even specifically, right? It's just – it's I guess it's really just the mode of the mental state that they're in at that age, right?
How many students are we talking about?
So, I mean, I've got about 21 right now.
And what's the gender breakdown?
And 100% male.
Okay. I thought maybe you have a few.
Yeah. And this is interesting, right? Because, you know, because of the kind of class this is, it's more of like, it's not just like a cross section of all males. It's, for lack of a better term, it's, you know, males that are interested in video games primarily during the summer, which is, you know, they're geeks.
Yeah.
I'm a geek. They're geeks. You know.
I wouldn't expect anything different.
Right.
That's
so
fine.
Last year was nice because we had a bunch of actually a few females, which actually was nice for when they keep them in check a little bit. But this year, no.
Did you find them thinking more critically?
Well, that was a whole different story. But we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get back.
All right.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
All right, it's Chatterbox Video Game Radio, and we are back. And we're talking about, I guess, the mental state of high schoolers who play video games.
Early humans.
Really. Well, yeah, it's funny
early
because
humans.
Because I'm
like
thinking that, you know, maybe you have to be exposed to video games for a certain amount of time before you actually even think to start thinking critically about them. You know,
that's true. And I mean, that could be said about anything, really.
Right. Well, sure, of course. Right. But I'm just thinking back to, you know, when I was in high school, it's really not a fair comparison because I'd already been just had an insane amount of exposure to video games by then. You know, so I go back even more in my life, right, to around like some Nintendo days.
I'm willing to bet that these kids have had the same amount of exposure, but I wonder if they've like when you go to school and you read books and you're asked to write book reports and talk about books, like you exist in a somewhat academic environment for all of the subjects that you cover at school, science, math, English, whatever, right?
Sure.
And until now, they've only probably handled games recreationally and never been asked to try to dissect any part of a game. And now they're being asked for the first time. They kind of have to work that muscle a bit.
Right. But even then, right, I mean, I think that maybe the amount of exposure is different. And obviously, I mean, the individuality has something to do with it, right? But by the time I was in high school, like, nobody asked me to look at games critically, you know. But even by then,
you weren't going
like,
to ASU's camp.
Well, I wasn't going to ASU's camp. But, I mean, even then, right, I mean, I was doing my own little fanzine. And yeah. I had lots of myriad things to complain about, even in my 10th grade self.
So that just makes you an overachiever, right?
Well, I mean, I guess. I mean, I got to overachieve with something, right?
I should point out before I move on that you can be an overachiever by going to RS class at ASU, but you could also go nearly year-round to UAT, the University of Advancing Technology, and you can learn more about the programs they have at uat.edu.
Very nicely done, sir.
Now, do we want to keep talking about this? We've got a caller on the line who wants to talk about something mysterious.
Yeah, so let's. I just want to say a couple more words, and then maybe we can take that call.
All right. So
I was just thinking about, you know, when I was a young lad. I won't say last this time like I did last time.
I really enjoyed that.
Even though it's funnier. You know, I don't know. For some reason, I'm thinking of, like, the really early Nintendo games. For some reason, like, 3D World Runner comes to mind. Did you guys ever play that game?
3D Road Runner?
3D World Runner.
Oh, I think you said Road Runner.
No, not Road Runner.
I was
World
like,
Runner.
What?
And let's see, like, what other games that I play around that time? Like, Ghosts and Goblins, for example. For some reason, both of those stick out in my mind.
Ghosts and Goblins on Super Nintendo?
No, the first one.
Oh, either way, both
Ghosts and Goblins. It was... So Ghosts and Goblins is an incredibly bone-crushingly difficult game.
It is.
And actually, World Runner has some aspects of bone-crushing difficulty. And the funny thing is that I can't remember being frustrated with those games at all.
You mean you only know they're difficult because other people said they were difficult, or you just didn't get frustrated by the difficulty?
Well, I only know that they're difficult now, or even frustratingly difficult, right? Because that's like a very, very precise way to construe the difficulty. It's by me maybe going back to it and playing it after, you know, those early years, right? But the interesting thing is that I really think that, yeah, like way back when I first started playing games, it's like it's almost like it's analogous to kids not being afraid because they haven't learned to be afraid of anything yet, because they haven't been bitten in the ass. It's like if you don't have a certain amount of exposure to something, you know, we're talking about games here, right? You don't even think to get frustrated because, you know, possibly there's something about the process of getting frustrated hasn't even been, you know, instilled in you yet. You know, maybe you don't even have the expectations. You know, I'm really just taking stabs in the dark.
Well, I was going to discuss expectations there too. I mean, when you're a kid, or at least when we were kids, games were often like that. Platformers, I mean, they were always 2D, and there was a lot of jumping. See if you can jump from here to there at exactly the right time. You know, you see the enemies coming in a certain, you know, wave pattern. You have to basically know what's coming and practice it over and over by dying and repeating it until you figure out how to do it properly. And
right.
So that sort of repetition was required and part of a lot of games. So it just became a standard fare, right? These days, there's so much variety in the different games we play that maybe we would, even kids who haven't experienced all the frustration, would get frustrated more easily simply
right.
because they're not used to it.
And repetition isn't the only component of frustration, but I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that because of the range of media that we were exposed to, I mean, video game wise, which was quite small compared to what you can get today, you didn't even know how anything could be any different, right? And without having a conceptualization of how something could be different, you don't have expectations for how it should be based on, I mean, compared to what it really is. And if you don't have expectations, then how can you be frustrated?
Yeah.
Right? That's my 5-minute theory.
No, I see a lot of what you're saying. I can understand that. Now, moving on a little bit, someone called us and wants to discuss a bit about games. We got Dave from Pittsburgh. If anybody else wants to call, you can call 866-536-1100. We're here for about another half an hour. Feel free to call us, talk about whatever you'd like. Of course, we got plenty to talk about ourselves as well. So, Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, Dave?
Hey. So last week, you guys just kind of mentioned in passing that the sequel for Left 4 Dead was coming out. But you didn't really talk about some of the uproar in the community and the controversy about it coming out so soon.
That's true. You know, now, let me ask you before you move on. When you say last week, are you talking about the show when I called in from E3 or the show since then where I was in studio last week?
I think it was last week's when you were in studio.
Okay, because we only had that available on the internet for like a day.
Yeah, because we didn't talk about it. When
because
you
were the weird timing that happened when I'm away at E3. All right, keep going.
I see. Okay. Okay, well, it's probably 5 or 6 years ago, I think people would have been excited to have, you know, a sequel to a game that they like. But now, you know, everybody's finally gotten used to the idea of downloadable content. And a lot of people, I think, when they buy, you know, a $50-$60 game, they kind of expect to be able to get a relatively cheap extension, you know, $10, maybe $20, to be able to keep playing it for another 6 months to a year. So I think some people assume that was going to happen with this game.
So wait,
almost feel betrayed.
You have to.
I don't know. Do you guys agree with that? Do you guys think that that's?
You'll have to educate us a bit on the background here.
Let me take care of that part. Dave, you're absolutely right. There has been a lot of uproar. Part of the reason I didn't talk about it is because I personally don't care that much about Left 4 Dead. Although I got to tell you, it did seem like a lot of fun when I played Left 4 Dead 2 at E3. I just was never a big player of the original, and by never a big player, I mean I never actually played it. But I think there's a couple things to think about here, and Ara, for your education. So Left 4 Dead came out, it's a Valve game, came out last year. It's been very, very successful. Now, what do we know about Valve games historically? Like they're
pretty darn awesome.
Yeah, they're awesome. They also give a lot of stuff for free, and they have a lot of expansion packs for, you know, a minimal extra investment. So you get Half-Life, and you can get Episode 1, Episode 2, Episode 3 for like half the price of a real
game.
Now,
did it come out exactly a year ago? It seems like it's more recent than
that. By the time Left 4 Dead 2 comes out, it will have been a year.
Yeah, so not even a year since the original game. And so there is this uproar, a lot of people saying it's not that different a game. Like, it's still a first-person shooter. It's still zombies running at you. You still have similar weapons, right? It's just a different, slightly different storyline because there's different protagonists, right? And there's a couple new enemies, and the weapons might work a little bit differently. But for the most part, it seems like a very similar game. And so people are kind of upset that they're going to be asked to pay, you know, for a whole new game when they really could just release it as an expansion. Did I get that all right, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people see it as more like Left 4 Dead 1.5. And I wonder if you think Valve is going to price it like that. Like, Apple just did that with, you know, with the new expansion. Leopard, people don't have to pay $30. And since, at least for the PC side, it's, you know, it's on Steam, they know who already owns it. Do you think they might have an upgrade price and a full price or something like that? Because I think they're going to get a lot of bad will in the community if it is like a whole new game. Because they say that they're still going to release content for the old one, but, you know, if they're not concentrate, you know, something's going to suffer if they're trying to concentrate on two different versions of basically the same game.
So let me give you my take. A lot of this, I think, stems from the fact that it came from Valve. If this happened from another company that didn't have a history of being so good to, in terms of value to its customers, I think there wouldn't be this level of uproar. beyond that, I kind of realized recently that I'm going to stop worrying about price differentiation from game to game. Like, I have a bigger concern over something that I believe should be free versus paid. But how much you pay, well, are we willing to pay $20, $30, $60? Who knows? And, you know, EA does this year after year after year, and people love it. They eat it up, right? Every sports game comes out so often.
Well, this is funny. I mean, like, the most incremental product ever, Madden, right?
Yeah, and it's one of the most popular in the world. Exactly. I mean, you get a few people mentioning it, but still everybody buys it by the droves to the point that they absolutely expect it.
I guess it's the roster thing, but still.
Yeah. But I mean, part of me totally agrees with you. Yeah, they could have just released it as an expansion. I mean, how similar was Half-Life Episode 1 or Half-Life 2 Episode 1 to Half-Life 2? I mean, it's a different storyline, right?
Yeah.
And there were new weapons, Rich? Stay on the line, Dave. I want to talk more about this after the break. We'll be right back.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woo-hoo!
We're back, Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Don't forget, head over to our website, chatterboxgameshow.com, to learn more about us. And from there, you'll find a link to Golgatron.com. We mentioned that at the top of the show. That's our new sister editorial website, where you'll see articles from Ara, Rich, myself, Josh, Corey. We had Josh on the show last week. If you pay attention to all the podcasts, you would have heard him and his beautiful, beautiful voice. So that website is constantly evolving, and we welcome you to visit that and see what we have to say. And, you know, listen to the wonderful podcast that we do over at GolgaCast, Golgatron as well. All right, so Dave, you're on the air again, right?
I'm here.
Okay, fantastic. So you brought to our attention this whole issue with Left 4 Dead 2, or at least you brought it up during the show, and the upcry in the community. And I think a lot of people have said, I'm not the first one to say, that, you know, really people are going to see this in two different ways. Some are just going to be like, we like the game, why not pay for a second one? It was good the first time, it'll be good the second time, stop whining. And the other people say, you know, why would they do this to us? We supported them the first time, it's not that big of a thing, they should just release an expansion. And during the break, Rich was making the point that they've already said that they're going to continue supporting the first one, and they might even take some of the features that they put into Left 4 Dead 2 into the original Left 4 Dead. Now, you also pointed out that one of them is going to suffer development time. They're not going to put a full team of developers on Left 4 Dead, the first one, when they got Left 4 Dead 2 to work on expansions for, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I agree with that. I remember
that's reasonable. Like, why would they...
It's not reasonable when they say they're going to continue supporting the first one.
Well, they're
going to
continue
really
supporting it.
It.
Like, if, like, when Left 4 Dead 2 comes out, I'm sure they're going to try to update Left 4 Dead 1 to have, you know, some to most of the same features. But after that, like, why would they keep updating the first one when the second one's out?
Exactly.
Honestly,
there's no reason to.
To right, even yeah. support the first one at all is way beyond what most developers would
yeah.
do.
Yeah, and I can tell you whether or not they say they will, they won't. And, I mean, obviously that's just speculation, but we all know that that's right. Sure, they may integrate some of the features from the second one into the first, but you're not going to see storyline extensive content applied to the first one. You're not going to see expansion packs for those. It's not going to happen. When I bought my Super Nintendo after having the NES for years, oh, I'm going to keep buying games for the NES. No, I didn't buy a single one. And the same thing has happened down the road. Nobody continues supporting old stuff when the new is out there, and everybody's going to get the new game, even though people complain about it coming too fast. It doesn't matter.
Well here's one question I have, right? Is the main complaint that the sequel is too soon, and so therefore it can't be very different, or B, that people actually believe that in fact it's just not different enough to be a legitimate sequel?
I think it's the second. Yeah.
I don't think anyone has analyzed their emotions well enough, and I would almost guarantee that if this announcement were made a year later, you wouldn't get the outcry. Even if it was exactly the same code.
I think
it's
true.
Because it's too soon is what people are mostly complaining about.
And here's something I think for the bigger picture. Do you think that with the how common downloadable content's become, do you think that it's changed what we think about sequels? New character, new story, that's just an expansion pack. That a sequel has to be some kind of new mechanic or new engine or something like that.
Well, I mean, Left 4 Dead doesn't have story, really. It's four characters and you shoot zombies. It's really fun, but they're adding story. They're creating more characters. There's going to be way more dialogue. There's going to be new maps. There's going to be new common zombies. There's going to be new special zombies. There's going to be a new director. It's a lot of new content. There's way more content in the second one than there was in Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, but most games now, when they're just adding like a couple of new enemy types and maybe a new character, they're doing that as a content because they haven't changed the base game. They're really it's really just a mod, like a Valve mod for the first game.
So that's
why I think there's a big uproar. And I just bought Left 4 Dead, the first one myself, maybe a couple months ago. I was late on the bandwagon. So of course this hit me kind of on a personal note. I guess I'm a little bitter.
Let me ask you this, Dave. Can you think of any first person shooter that has come out in the past that then had a sequel come out where it wasn't a major engine overhaul? I would think Call of Duty comes right out there. Call of Duty 4 versus World at War, even though they were made by different groups of people, it was the same engine. Doom
well,
to Doom 2.
There's two different teams working on it. It's not
but
the
it's
same
still,
company.
But still, it's a full new game. The mechanic is exactly the same when you compare World at War to Call of Duty 4. It's the same controls, it's the same first-person shooter, multiplayer plays the same, but it's World at War is World War II, Call of Duty 4 is the Modern Warfare, and it's a different story mode. But it's the core of the game is exactly the same.
Yeah. And now, I'm not trying to defend one side or the other. I see both points. But here's,
me either, really.
I want to leave you with a couple more thoughts. Maybe I've forgotten the first one and we'll leave you with just one. let's say that the number 2 was replaced with a subtitle. Left 4 Dead, blah, 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 people in Louisiana. Right? Because that's where it is, right?
Yeah.
And instead of charging $50 or $40, whatever the PC's version is going to cost, they charge $20 less. All right, same content, same everything, but it was a slight variation in title and a somewhat significant variation in price. Right? People would be happy and not complain. And maybe Valve made a bad move by doing that. But look at it, like, really all you're doing is quibbling over how much they're choosing to charge you for this content. And once you put it in that perspective, well, is it content you're willing to pay for, or is it not content you're willing to pay for? Certainly, if you wait a couple months, it's going to go down in price. You'll be able to buy it used, whatever. I mean, half of the people are pirating it anyway.
Yeah, you know what? This kind of reeks of something. And I think the smell is just of the internet mob mentality of, first of all, like, what can we complain about? And how can we figure out how to complain about this regardless of what the company announces they're going to do?
I don't want to demean it that much, people's emotions. Like, I understand where they're coming from, and I traditionally have been someone to complain about getting ripped off you know, time
and
time
again. But they haven't taken away anything from you, and you certainly have a choice to buy it or not to buy it. Like, this just smacks of a whole bunch of people feeling like they're entitled to get the sequel for something less or to get more.
That was the about. There's a history there. You know, with Team Fortress 2, they're still releasing patches and tweaks and upgrades and things like that. And I think that people are expecting to get that with Left 4 Dead, and now they're not.
Yeah, large updates.
It doesn't
for
look
Team
like
Fortress
they're going
2.
To.
So they.
It's just some ill will towards Valve. It's kind of like Valve. We just kind of expected it from them, and we're not getting.
That's
it.
Exactly.
So like you gave this to me for free last time, and now you're making me charge, and now I think you're an a-hole.
That's exactly the other.
Well, exactly
point.
Right. That's why I buy the value of the game and not other games, and now I may not buy this one because Left 4 Dead 3 might be coming out in a year later.
That's exactly the point I was going to make that I said I'd forgotten, is that we've developed an expectation because of the company, because they have traditionally done such a great job supporting the community and supporting their products. And we've basically, when people are paying $60 for a game, or you guys don't pay $60 for PC games, whatever you pay for Half-Life 2 and whatever, you pay it with the expectation that you're going to get more than you actually purchased. And maybe that's a fool's expectation, maybe not. I mean, they've done a great job, and I would have that expectation myself if I was in your shoes. But on the same token, I can't quite blame them if they put that much effort into a game.
One thing I don't think it bothers me so much is I bought it when it was on sale for $25 that one weekend. So, like, when Left 4 Dead 2 comes out, like, sweet, I'll wait for it until it's, like, $30, and then I'll buy that one and play it a bit.
Yeah. Well, so, at this point, it's come down to basically quibbling over price and expectations. So, listen, Dave, I really appreciate your call. We got to move on a bit here. It is a great topic, and other people had said that we should talk about it as well, so I'm sorry we skipped over it earlier.
Let me just say real quick that no matter how angry any of these fanboys are, they cannot be more angry than me buying Oblivion and spending 200 hours on it, and then buying downloadable content and having that downloadable content actually corrupt my save file, and having Bethesda tell me, sorry, too bad. We can't do anything.
Sorry. And on that note, we'll say goodbye, Dave. Thank you very much. We got another caller, Scott. He's called many times before. Scott from Ontario. Let's bring him on the air. Scott, you are on the air.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Scott?
Sorry for this, but I was actually going to talk about the same topic he was.
No, that's fine. I'm pretty sure I saw you in the chat. Maybe not this week because I'm not even in there right now, but in the past you've talked about the subject and thought we should bring it up. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah. The thing I should mention as well is this doesn't just apply for video games in general. I actually heard of this one term. I can't remember where it was from, but it was actually called conditioning your customers.
Yep.
Where basically a company puts about an expectation, either good or bad, and like let's say in Valve's case, they overachieve and they strive to overachieve, and they do that game after game after game after game. Well, if you come to the next time, they're always going to have to better themselves. Whereas if you get a company like, let's say, Apple, well, if they charge, they own $9 pair of headphones, $50, and they keep doing it time after time after time after time, eventually people are going to be saying, oh, $50 is what it is. So if you have, even in some cases, and I work at a retail store, I know this, if you have two, like, just a couple aisles apart, exactly the same component, one is branded iPod accessory, one's not, then people are going to expect that the iPod accessory is going to be more expensive and pay it when, in fact, the other option is just a couple aisles over and it works exactly the same way. It works for all industries, not just games.
No, you're absolutely right. The human condition definitely has to do with expectations. We get upset when our expectations are dashed and we get excited when our expectations are exceeded. And that's what's happening here. People have expected certain things from Valve, and it's those people who are the vocal ones complaining about it. The people in the audience at Microsoft when they announced this who weren't like huge Valve fanboys were just happy to see a sequel of a popular game that existed. So it definitely has to do with expectations, and what you said, conditioning, same thing.
So basically, the crack dealer has given away too much crack for free.
Pretty much. And my question is the marketing side of things. Should Valve have intentionally waited to make this announcement and just not talked about Left 4 Dead for another year? Would they have been better off to not hype it and to maybe not even produce extra content for Left 4 Dead and just wait? Because now they might be kicking themselves in the foot. We'll be right back.
And we're back for the final segment of Chatterbox Video Game Radio. And I
love how you do that. It sounds so
sweet.
Sensual.
Well, I try to do something different every time because I get bored.
I just there's a local station in Phoenix. It's a smooth jazz station, right?
KJZZ. Guess what KJZZ spells?
No, I was thinking the KYOT. The Coyote, and it's this really deep voice black dude doing it, and it's just always so smooth jazz.
Well, I can always talk like this if you really want.
Norm, is there a rule that says I can't advertise another station?
No, I mean, hey, we have people, we have other hosts from other radio stations on the show.
All right, I don't want to think I'm breaking my contract that I've never
seen.
We
just start naming a whole bunch of other radio stations. And like, whoops.
I'm just saying that the guy who does that KYOT thing, and it was the guy who years ago used to do the old 7-Up commercials,
which I'm totally not familiar with, but that's fantastic.
With that same voice.
All right, that's cool. Well, thanks. So yeah, that just makes me think of that when
7-Up,
you do that intro.
You should really drink it.
Yeah. And before we talk about other stuff, I'm going to once again remind people to go to uat.edu, the website for the University of Advancing Technology, because that's what I do. I tell you to go to that website. Now, all right, you've got a little picture in front of you that you
yes
showed me.
So I've got something very special to share.
By the way, you're a fantastic artist.
Well, I try. So
that is a nice picture.
All right. What is the picture of? The picture is actually of a stick figure. I was sketching out for...
Without a head or with a very small head?
No, it's actually just... That's supposed to represent a point. I was sketching out the stick figure that if you play Project Natal, this is what the computer thinks you are. And so I had a rare opportunity in a secret army base in an undisclosed location to actually try out Project Natal, which
we're all very jello.
Well, it was surprising, and I think that dude, you got to stop doing
that.
I think
he's swatting at red balls.
You're like freaking me out. I'm freaking you.
Yes,
I don't know.
Yes, you are freaking me out. Okay, so back on topic now. So I actually got a chance to play it. And so the first question that you might
when you play,
say,
you mean like play the demo game that we saw at E3, or?
Right? So how can you play a technology that's not done yet? Right. Well, apparently there's
you can't.
There's some. Well, no, you can. There's some demo applications, and I mean they're not like full fledged games or anything. They're really just only to show you how it works, right? Yeah. So,
I'm just wondering if it's the same thing that we saw, or if it was other technology
not sure.
Demo stuff.
Well, there's a really crude driving game demo. Very crude. And there's also
the
a very
actual,
crude flying game.
Project Gotham Racing demo that you played or not?
No.
Because they showed that on Jimmy Fallon.
No.
Okay.
Nothing like that.
Oh, I wasn't sure.
So there's a couple of interesting things that I learned about Project Natal. Now, even though I made the vampire joke last time, it actually, even though it uses infrared, it doesn't use infrared in the way you'd think it would, right? So the system actually shoots out infrared light, and it reads the reflection of that, or more specifically, I guess, the absorption of that, to actually figure out where you are and such. So, for example, if you hold up, I don't know, a coffee mug, an inanimate object that's not actually hot, it still detects it. It doesn't detect heat, right?
Did we think it was
detecting? Well, the implication was there with my vampire joke, right?
Oh, I had never thought that, for the record.
But, right, well, if you did... Then,
the bummer here is that if you have a candle in the background or a halogen bulb or something.
Well, really, like any kind of light. I mean, I think that they're shooting out basically the infrared light in order to basically light a scene, which is you
in the dark.
In the dark, right. So that it's more resilient under various lighting conditions. However,
and works in a projection room.
Right. However, it's still subject to, you know, errors and mistakes, and you know you're still dealing with an analog type of input, and not just, you know, a joystick analog type of input, but a very, very noisy image type of input, right? And so basically, it takes the screen and it,
for the record, I gotta ask,
yeah,
were you really told that it only pays attention to the infrared input? I think it throws out the infrared, it also sees normal images, because as we saw in the demos, it put on what it sees on the screen, so clearly it sees normal, not infrared messed up images.
When did it show that?
Right. It probably uses some combination of both, I suppose.
Oh,
you know,
I
don't know exactly
thing.
You know what the algorithm is like, or what precisely it uses as the input, but
I think it throws out the infrared light to increase what it can see in case it's dark.
Right, right.
But I don't think it relies only on that.
And that makes total sense.
Okay.
So one interesting thing I found out, for example, if you have something reflective, right, totally hoses the thing. It gets very confused. Another interesting thing I found out was that basically it constructs the stick figure of you or whatever, you know, person is in front of the camera when it thinks it recognizes a person. And so the fidelity of this stick figure is obviously limited, right? So, for example, your head is a point. Your head is not doesn't really have orientation. So it either tries to figure out the orientation of your head from the orientation of your shoulders, for example, or it just doesn't know. And so you get these interesting side effects, like if you kind of turn around, it doesn't really know that your head's necessarily turned around in some cases, and you get the nice, you know, exorcist effect. Sometimes, actually, like your legs can it can think that it gets crossed, which is kind of interesting to me, because if it was, I don't know why or how you would ever want to cross your legs, but there it is. The other interesting thing is in terms of the fidelity of your arm, right? It knows that you have an upper arm and a lower arm, and it has a joint, and it has this little line for your hand. So it can detect, basically, maybe if you're making a motion with your wrist, but it can't really tell your fingers apart, for example. So if you were ever thinking that you were doing something with your fingers specifically, this will probably never work in this game.
But also, I mean, we should point out that this is just how the demo you were playing worked. It could certainly recognize that there's two eyeballs and then orient the head somehow.
Like, well, I mean, theoretically, right? I'm just telling you about the state that it's in right now. Obviously, it's technology and development.
Yeah. So also, it could put in software that says, if these two legs cross, then recalibrate and assume that they're not crossed. Right. It could do more in terms of its processing to decide where things are intelligently.
It could, right? And so we're not extrapolating on, you know, what the limitations of it, what it could possibly be are right now. I'm just telling you how it is right now.
Yeah.
So there's a really interesting thing was, you know, yeah, there was okay, so this little racing demo, right? Basically, I mean, it was actually kind of annoying, right? Because in order to tell it to go, you basically lifted up your right leg.
Lift it up?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were standing, right, when we were doing this. So ostensibly, if you're sitting, you could just move your right leg forward, I guess, and hopefully we'll detect
that. I'm curious, if you're standing up and you're going by lifting your right leg,
yeah.
What if you want to both gas and brake at the same time?
Well, you can't do that in this demo. You can't. There's no brake. It's just
go.
Your leg is up and you're going, and your leg is not up and you're not going.
So that doesn't seem very realistic.
Well, it's not realistic, you know, I mean, like, we don't know exactly how fine its detection can get, but, I mean, certainly, I mean, it can't get too granular. The other thing that was actually really interesting and a side effect was that, you know, you steer, you put your hands in the air, right, and you steer by basically just pretending you have a steering wheel and you kind of just gesture, and that actually works. But a funny side effect was that the closer your hands are together, the more sensitive that control is. And so what I ended up doing, actually, was basically holding my arms out beyond my shoulders and pretending I was moving this gigantic wheel. And that actually felt much better in terms of control than
it's kinda like you're,
having them like a steering wheel.
You're navigating a boat.
Yes, perhaps. Perhaps they'll release, I don't know, naval racing or something like that.
Naval racing.
Pirate ship adventures.
But
was that the only one you played? Was the racing one?
So, I mean, there was a plain one as well, but that was a little crazy because it was just even – I mean, it's hard enough.
Did you have to hold your arms out like an airplane?
We were trying a couple things.
It and make sound effects?
The plane one was really hard to control.
Oh.
I mean, they also had, you know, the Avatar demo.
Where it just twitches crazily? Or did it work when
you
were doing it?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of twitching
okay.
there, too.
That's what I thought.
So. I'm curious, what could be – like, they're part of the hype that they were trying to produce it at E3 was that you don't need anything else. It's just the camera, and then it sees you.
Right.
But what bugs me is this kind of goes back to how Sony handled things with the iToy. Back when they first showed it off, before it was an actual device, when it was just R&D, and I've talked about that several times on the show, they showed some really awesome demos. It could do some fantastic things. And just in terms of like recognition and recreating something on the screen, they would hold up a wand that was colored, and then they would hold up a different wand of a different color. It would recognize
right.
two different, you know, things that you were holding. Like one is a mace, and one is a, you know, a fairy's wand or a baseball bat or something, right?
Sure.
And you can move them both in space, and it would orient them properly, and the physics on the ball and the end of the mace would, you know, the chain would move realistically and stuff. So that really impressed me. But then when games finally came out for it, they never once suggested that you take a paper tube and color it with a highlighter. They didn't provide you with tubes of different colors. They didn't give you a little, you know, Nerf plushy ball to put on the end of a stick, one red, one blue, one yellow, whatever, right? There's all these things you could do to actually enhance the operation of these camera devices where they'd work better, but for some reason they're shying away from doing that. And I think back to the Atari days where, like, you would insert your own controller overlay to, like, the ColecoVision or whatever. Like,
right.
You could do your own things to enhance these games, and they shy away from it. Like, oh, no, if it's not officially sanctioned, then we're not going to do it, and we don't want to put out these new peripherals to make people feel like they have to have all this extra crap. It should just work. Like, no, I want a wand. Give me a wand to hold
right. That
makes the thing work better, because until now, it hasn't worked very well at all.
Well, I think maybe they misjudged the marketing effect of such things, right? Because it seems like sounds like to me anyway, that they made a conscious decision that we will not give the peripherals, even if they make performance better, because we think that, you know, maybe this is more effective marketing-wise if we don't create the perception that you require peripheral, regardless of the fact that it works much worse without such things.
Exactly. What's happening here is they're consciously sacrificing precision for what they deem accessibility.
And you know what? They could be completely wrong. And maybe they are completely wrong and they just haven't realized it yet, just like everybody was wrong about music games before someone actually had the guts to build a peripheral, even though it was expensive and made tons and tons of money in this country.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I just it bugs me that they're sacrificing the precision for the mainstream audience. Just make it simple. You can make it simple.
It bugs me too.
Put in a colored stick. What's the big deal? Then charge $2 at retail for it, or hell, that, you know, they would charge $15. And people would still buy it. Sony, on the other hand, gets it, and they're going to make a wand that has some sort of coloration or visibility on the end of it. And I'm
possibly
happy.
3 years too late.
Supposedly, they're doing that. Anyway, I had so much more to talk about, especially in terms of peripherals. We didn't get to it this week. We've still got next week. And again, check out Golgatron.com. I think I'm going to write an article for that pertaining to the stuff that I didn't get to talk about today. And that's really it. We'll be back next week.
Good times. Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your bases are belong to us.